being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the son of Maharaj Dasharath. Purport. Lord Ramchandra and his brothers Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna were all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many, many forms, Advaitam Achyutam Ananam Ananta Rupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 5.39, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan. The Lord is situated in many forms, such as Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. And these forms may exist in any part of His creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead. And they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramchandra, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, being Vishnu Tattva, are all equally powerful. They became the sons of Maharaj Dasharath in response to prayers by the demigods. So, this is explaining how the Lord appeared as the sons of Dasharath. Some years ago in Mayapur, our godbrother, Atmatattva Prabhu, he gave some narrations of Ram Leela taken from different Puranas and some of the different Ramayanas. And he selected them according to their presentation of Siddhanta, the proper Siddhanta. And some very interesting new ideas are presented there. Of course, the Leela of the Lord is ever fresh and always new and attractive and exciting. But we thought we could read some of those selections and over the next 2 or 3 days until Monday, and maybe go through the whole pastime in a very summary way. So first of all, this verse mentions that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His four features as Ram and Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna appeared as the son of King Dasharath. So why was King Dasharath called Dasharath? Why did he have the name Dasharath? Das means 10 and Rath means chariot. So he explains. Lord Ramachandra appeared in the Ikshvaku dynasty. Therefore, Ramachandra is known as Ikshvaku Kuladan, or the wealth of the family of Ikshvaku Kuladan. Kula means dynasty, and dan means property or valuable jewel. So Ramachandra is the most valuable jewel of the Ikshvaku dynasty. The reason his father was known as Dasarath, because he could fight in 10 directions simultaneously, because he was expert in all mystic powers. So when demons would attack Dasarath, King Dasarath, he would expand himself into 10 forms. And his wrath that he was riding on, his chariot, would expand into 10 chariots. Because there are only 10 directions. There are the 8 cardinal directions, north, south, east, west, northeast, southeast, etc. There's 8 directions on this plane. Then there's the upward direction and the downward direction. So there's 10 directions. So if anyone fights you, they have to approach you from one of those directions, up or down, north or south, northeast or southeast. So Dasharath would expand his chariot. His chariot would be 10 chariots. So when the Asura would go to attack Dasharath, they would see 10 chariots and 10 Dasharaths fighting simultaneously from 10 directions. So Ramachandra's father was no small timer. he was Ati Rati. He was a very powerful fighter with all mystic powers. So that is why he got the name. And he was, of course, Dasharath was very famous for fighting on behalf of the demigods. He would often help them and other righteous kings. King Dasharath, he married Kaushalya. But only one daughter was born, and her name was Shanti. As you know, Shanti means peace. But even though King Dasharath had a daughter named Shanti, he had no peace. He was not peaceful. He was unhappy in one sense, because how would his dynasty go on? So Shanti, of course, being the daughter, she would be given to another prince, or who would become, she would become his wife, and she would become part of the other dynasty. This is the Vedic system, that the dynasty is represented by the son, because a daughter is given away to another family. So she enters the other family and she becomes part of that dynasty. That's what he's explaining. So then he's thinking, what about my dynasty, Ikshvaku dynasty? Dasharath was worried. Then he married Sumitra. So at least from Kaushalya he had a daughter, but Sumitra had no child. So Dasharath, he was getting old, and he gave up the idea of producing dynasties. He started to think, how is it possible? So then he was advised to marry again. So he married Kaikeyi from the Kaikeya province. And it explains that the kingdom of Kosala, which is the kingdom of Dasharath, it extended from Tibet. Tibet is quite far north. There's Nepal and then the Himalayas and Tibet. It went from Tibet all the way down to the river Godavari in Andhra Pradesh. So practically the whole of India was the Kosala kingdom. So Dasharath was very worried that after his death, his kingdom would be broken to pieces. So then Vasishtha advised him. But when he married Kaikeyi was that Kaikeyi's father said that you have other queens that you've already married, but with my daughter, any children that you have from her, those children should inherit your kingdom. You have to promise. This was some kind of kula, this kind of promise, some kind of, there's a term for it he uses here. Kanya shulka. This kanya shulka, some kind of, he had to write it down. Yes, I promise that my kingdom I will give to your son. It will be Kaikeyi's. Even if my other queens have my Sumitra or Kaushalya, I will give the kingdom to your son. So there, on those conditions, he received Kaikeyi as his wife. Then Vasishtha Muni, he advised, because he wanted to have a son, so he advised Dasharath to do an Ashwamedha Yajna. So he started this Ashwamedha Yajna. Of course, you have to send a challenge horse around the world, and as a whole, to collect money from all the neighboring kings to do this yajna. So then while the yajna was going on, Sumantra, one old advisor, very old man, he remembered something. He said, listen, Dasharath, don't you remember that once Sanat Kumara came here and he told you that if you want to get a son, you'll not get a son by doing Ashwamedha Yajna, but you will receive a son by doing another kind of yajna. It's called Putra Kameshti. Putra Kameshti Yajna. So then Dasharath inquired from Vasishtha, how can we do that yajna? And he said, oh, actually, to perform that yajna, a very special purohit is required. A very special head priest is required. Oh, what are the qualifications? Well, this purohit, he must have never seen a woman in his life, at least before his marriage. He must not really know anything what woman is. So they were thinking, this might be a little difficult to find a purohit who doesn't know anything. So finally they came to know that there was one such personality as Rishyashringa. And Rishi Ashringa, he was born, this is a long story, he was born as a son of a deer or something. A long story he tells for many pages. And then he had these little horns on his head like a deer. Because he was produced by a deer and some sage or something. So then finally there was a whole arrangement made that they brought Rishi Ashringa to the kingdom to do this Putra Kameshri. But he had already commenced. Dasharatha had already started his Ashwamedha Yajna. While that was started, he started the preparations. Then Sumantra told him, wait a minute, you're doing this, but you should do this Putra Kameshi Yajna. So then what happened is they continued with the Ashwamedha Yajna, and right alongside the Ashwamedha Yajna, Rishi Ashringa came to do the Putra Kameshi Yajna. So as he was doing it, when he finished with the Purnahoti, which is the last, I think it's the final act, then from the fire, the Yajna Purusha came out. It was a very dark black figure. He was 3 miles tall. He had a huge kumbha in his hand. He was holding Lord Narayan in the kumbha, so it could not be a small affair. It had to be very big. So he said to Dasarath, please give this sweet rice in this pot to your queens. And Dasarath was looking at the size of the pot. Huge pot. The pot was as big as this room. Maybe bigger. And there were only, how many queens? 3-4 queens. And he was told, you feed this sweet, the contents, you divide this up and you distribute all this sweet rice to your queens. He was saying, that's impossible. Even Madhu Mangal couldn't eat that much sweet rice. You know, Krishna's coward boy or... you know, some like that. So then he was thinking. So then Rishi Ashringa, the Purohit, he asked the Yajna Purush, why are you giving such a big pot of kheer to these human beings that they can't even possibly hold? Then the Yajna Purush said, the personality who is coming is so powerful that you cannot reduce him to a smaller size than this. Then Rishi Ashringa, he closed his eyes and he said, ah, anoraniyan mahato mahiyan, bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest, that who he is in this pot. And then he told the Yajna Purush, you give the pot to me. In other words, Rishi Ashringa, he understood, because it wasn't very clearly told, it was kind of covered language, who was in the pot. He understood that the Supreme Personality of God was in the pot. That's why the pot was so big. He's Supreme Lord Narayan is not a small, you come a little pot of kheer and say, here, God's in this little pot. But then Rishi Ashringa is saying, yes, God is bigger than the biggest. Anoraniyan Mahato Mahiyan. He's Mahato Mahiyan, but he's also smaller than the smallest. Anayora Aniyan. God is inside the atom. The smallest part of material creation is the atom, but inside the atom is Chaitya Guru, Antaryami. Otherwise there's no movement there, there's no actions and reactions. Nothing goes on without the touch of the Lord. So he received the pot, and as soon as Rishi Ashringa received this huge pot, then it became very, very small. By the prayers and requests of Rishi Ashringa, the Lord reduced his Aishwarya, and the pot became small. This is like the interplay between Aishwarya Bhav and Madhurya Bhav. Sometimes the Lord displays his Aishwarya before the Bhakta. And the Bhakta, his intimacy of love, his intimate exchange with the Lord is somewhat reduced and diminished and disturbed by that display of grandeur and power and Aishwarya and opulence. And the Bhakta is thinking, my Lord, what can I do? How can I... you know, you're showing me, Mother Yashoda showed Krishna this universal form, and she was thinking, what is this? How am I supposed to breastfeed the universal form? With thousands of eyes and thousands and millions of mouths, and everywhere is hands and faces. Sarvato Panipadam Tat, Sarvato Kshikshiromakam. And then she was feeling, where's my little Damodar? Where's my little baby? And then her bhakti is coming out. So then the Lord reciprocated with his devotee, and he removed that Aishwarya. He took away that Virata Rup Darshan from Mother Yashoda at Brahmandagat, and then he showed his sweet, lovable form. so she could serve him in a human-like way, very intimate and personal way. So Rishi Ashringa, he's seeing a situation. Here we have the Leela of Maharaj Dasharatha and Ramachandra's Avirbhav. But there's all this Aishwarya is being displayed, this huge pot. Three Yajna Purush is 7 kilometers tall, and this huge pot, 1 kilometer wide pot. But this is Nara Leela. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead's Nara Leela. This is not his Leela as Bhagavan. This is Bhagavan, but not in this Aishwarya. This is his Nara Leela. The characteristic of Krishna or Bhagavan's Nara Leela is sweetness. Sweetness. This Nara means human-like. It's human-like. He's like about human size, not miles and miles, huge figure. It's sweet and intimate. So then Rishi Ashringa, by his devotion and by his prayers, and the Lord said, yes, all right, I will accommodate. I will present myself in a normal feature, just the unlimited absolute truth, who is impossible to contain because he's unlimited, Ananta Rupam. He agreed to reduce himself to fit in a small pot of kheer. Dasarath took that sweet rice, he gave half to Kaushalya, and then 1/4 to Sumitra and Kaikeyi. After Kaikeyi drank it, there was still some left. So that also was given to Sumitra. In this way, the Lord came as Lord Ramachandra into Kaushalya's womb. He came as Lakshman and Shatrughna in Sumitra's womb. And he came as Bharat and Kaikeyi's womb. Vasudev, Krishna or Vasudev, came as Ramachandra. Sankarshan came as Lakshman. It was like yesterday was Ramanuja's Avirbhav. So we're explaining how Ramanuja is described as being the incarnation of Sankarshan or Lakshman. Same. Sankarshan came as Lakshman. The Sudarshan disc came as Bharat. And the Panchajanya conch shell came as Shatrughna. So this is kind of a very quick summary of the birth. Now there's some description of the childhood pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. Kind of a quick, we're jumping quite long, big area here. So what happened was that, of course, you know the story of how I kind of skipped. Vishwamitra came, the famous Vishwamitra, and he begged Raman Lakshman to come. So they went with him. So there is an interesting description. When they went to the ashram of Vishishtamuni to learn Dhanur, the Dhanur Vidya, the science of archery and fighting, ballistics, and how to fight, as how to be a Kshatriya. So King Dasharath went there with Ramachandra and Lakshman, Lord Ramachandra. And he was there in the ashram of Vishishtamuni. And he wanted to see, he wanted to witness, he wanted to watch his son Ram pick up the bow. Because in the Kshatriya tradition, this gives great happiness to the father, if the father is a Kshatriya. Just like if you're a musician, say you're a Bengali kirtan leader, and you play mridanga. Now if you get a small mridanga for your child when he's 2 years old, 3 years old, and you just leave it sitting on the floor, and you let Junior loose, you know, you let him loose, you let the little boy start crawling, and you watch, what will he do? And he crawls over to the mridanga, and then somehow he tips it over exactly the right way, the dole or whatever they call it, you know, and he puts one side, and then he puts it in his lap, then he goes, if he goes like this, if he starts playing, the father says, oh, Haribo, he's going to be a great kirtanier, just see how he picked up the drum exactly, he picked it up correctly, he put it on his lap, and he went like this, offering some prayer to the drum first, he went like this, and then he went like this, and he played it. So much happiness will be in the father, that great Sangeetacharya, that great music teacher. So for the Kshatriya, his pride and joy is his son. and how his son will carry on the dynasty. How his son,
Jayagornitai,
how his son will display his chivalry, his valor, his country of power. Because he will inherit the kingdom. He will become the next king. So he wanted to see how will Ram pick up the bow? Because there are many things to consider here. It's not that, well, what's the big deal? You pick up the bow. But there's what we call, in English we use the word, he's a natural. He's a natural, like some little boy that doesn't know anything about music. He picks up a sitar and he starts playing, ding, 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 ding. Let's see. Hey, he's a natural. He knows this naturally. So when you go to pick up the bow, you can go and pick it up with your right hand. A little boy, you could say, pick up this bow. You've never shown him. You've never taught him any proper procedures. So he goes with his right hand and he picks it up. And he holds it like this. Then the father might think, doesn't look very good. How is he holding it? Why is he holding the bow in the right hand? And maybe he's holding the bow. The bow is like this. There's a handle. There's a middle part. But he holds the bow by the end. He holds the bow. He picks up the bow with his right hand and he holds it by the end, or he holds it by the string. He's holding the bow. He's a little boy. He picks up the bow and he holds it by the string. And the father will think, oh, this doesn't look so auspicious. But if the son goes over to the bow, he's a young boy, 5 years old. He looks at the bow. And he takes his hand, his left hand, he puts it right on the grip, exactly on the handle of the bow. And he picks it up exactly, you know, like this. And he stands, and then as soon as he picks it up, something comes over him, a certain kind of bob, and he stands there and puts one foot back and one foot forward. And he puts his hand like this. He has no arrow, but he puts his hand like this. Or even puts his finger on the string, or two fingers, in a certain way, and he goes, and the father looks, he says, look, Dasa, look, Vashishtha, look, 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 look the way he picked up the bow, he's a natural. Look, hey, that's my son. That's my son you're looking at, see? He's a natural Kshatriya, he's going to be great. He hasn't even received one lesson about the bow, look how he picked it up. So this is why it's a tradition among Vedic kings to go to the ashram of the guru and to see, to watch their son pick up the bow. You understand? So when Dasarath went to Vishishtha Muni's ashram, Vishishtha, he was sitting there waiting for that moment. And Lakshman was there, Lord Ramachandra was there. And then Vishishtha Muni, he said, my dear king, Dasarath, please, you have to go now. Please, you go. He said, no, but I want to see my son, you know, lift the bow. He says, yes, it's our tradition of kings to watch the son the first time he lifts the bow. So Vashishtha Muni said, yes, it is the tradition among kings to watch their son lift the bow. But it is not the tradition among kings to produce a son by eating sweet rice. Vishishtha Muni is very clever, because Dasarath was using some logic. It is a tradition among kings to watch their son lift the bow. I am a king, this is my son, therefore let me watch him lift the bow. So Vashishtha, he's very clever, he said, yes, it is a tradition, but my dear king, it is not a tradition for a king to produce a son by feeding sweet rice to his queen. So then Dasarath folded his hands and said, Jai Ho Maharaj, Jai Ho. I'm defeated. All right, carry on. And he left. Now why did Vashishtha do this? Was he cruel and mean? Was he denying Dasarath of his right to see Ramachandra, the boy, this is the Komara Leela or the Pogunda, whatever age he was, the young boy's Leela of lifting the bow? No, he was not cruel at all. Actually, he was very compassionate. He was not Krura, he was Akrura. He was not cruel, he was Karuna. Because what he was about to do, if Dasarath was to see that, Dasarath would become completely bewildered. Dasarath become completely confused, and his Shraddha, his Guru Bhakti would go upside down, and he wouldn't, and so many doubts would be created. So what was Vasishtha about to do? So after Dasarath had left the ashram, then Vasishtha Muni, he stood before Lakshman and Ramachandra and he folded his hands. And then he did pradakshina. He did parikrama four times around Lakshman and Ramachandra. Then he stood before them. He said, "My dear lords, I know who you are. You cannot conceal your identity from me. And I know that you are the source of all knowledge. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samanvitaham. Everything comes from you. You are the sarvakarna karnam. You are the cause of all causes. You are the supreme. You are controlling and moving everything and everyone. Somehow it is your leela. Whenever you appear in this world, you take a teacher. You accept a guru. When you come in Dwapar Yuga as Krishna, you accept Sandipani Muni. When you come in Kali Yuga as Gauranga," of course he didn't say that, but we can say when you come as Gauranga, you accept your guru Gangadas to teach you Sanskrit. Gangadas Pandit is your Vyakaran guru, and then you take Diksha from Ishvara Puri, and you take Sannyas from Keshava Bharati. So in every avatar, you always take guru. This is your leela. So all the knowledge that I'm going to teach you, actually you already know. You know everything. But it's your leela that you want me to act as a teacher and you want to act as my shishya. So I will serve your leela. I will try to teach you this Dhanur Vidya. But please, if I make any mistakes, please forgive me. So then they began the teachings. So then, a few days later, Ram and Lakshman, they had not actually started yet their archery classes, because their archery means the dhanur, learning the bow and arrow. Because there are many other things that had to be learned, so they had not actually commenced. And Vasishtha was doing some yajna, he was busy with some work. And the two boys were playing a little bit nearby in the ashram, some distance away from their Gurudev, Vasishtha Muni. And they saw one lady walking along the path. She just had come from the river and she was carrying a water pot on her head. She was carrying this big pot of water. And she had a ring in her nose. A nose ring, which is standard, ladies, they wear a nose ring. But it's a very huge nose ring. Like in some provinces in India, they wear very big nose rings. Then Lakshman said to Ram, he said, "Hey, let's have some fun. See that lady with the pot of water in her head?" And Ram said, "Yes." Lakshman said, watch this. So then there was an arrow lying there, because this is an ashram where you learn, just like in a music school, there's so many musical instruments lying around in a music school. So in a school of Dhanur Vidya, there's so many arrows and bows and swords and shields all lying everywhere around. So he picked up one arrow and then picked up a bow. Now they hadn't been instructed in how to control arrows or shoot arrows. But Lakshman said, "Ramachandra, watch this. Ram, watch this." So then Lakshman shot the arrow, and the arrow went right up to the nose ring of this lady carrying the water. And it, next to the nose ring, from the arrow, all this nectar, all this amrit started coming out of the arrow, falling on the nose ring. And the nose ring became smaller and smaller and smaller. And what happened, as it became smaller, it started to pinch her nose. It pinched her nose and she couldn't breathe. Oh. Who loses something, you know, she started crying. "My nose ring! Bring it back! My husband gave it to me on my wedding day." So, So Lakshman, he looked at Ram and smiled. And Ram looked at him and communicated, we shouldn't give this lady too hard a time. So then Ramachandra gave me the bow. So he took the bow and he put an arrow and he shot the arrow. And the arrow went to Greater Kailash, or wherever. It went 10 kilometers and it picked up that ring. It brought the ring all the way back and put it back on the lady's nose, exactly where it was. And the lady was like, my God! My God! And Lakshman said, yes, that's right. This is your God. This is God. This is Bhagavan. No, she didn't say that, but she was amazed. So like this, Ram and Lakshman spent their time at Vasishtha Muni's ashram playing with bows and arrows and learning all these things because that's what they were there for. And then, let's see, what else do you have? So that was that one. Well, then they went home. And Ram and Lakshman were home, and then with Dasarath, and then Vishramitra Muni, he came, as you know. He came to visit Dasarath. And Vishramitra Muni, he was known, prone to be very angry, and he was always cursing people. He would do so much tapa, he would get this tapa balam, great strength from his austerities. But then something would happen, someone would insult him, or he would imagine someone would insult him, then he would curse that person. And then he would lose so much of his tapa balam, his strength of austerities. Then he would go back to the Himalayas and do more austerities for another 1,000 years. And this way he was passing his life cursing people, doing austerities, cursing people, doing austerities. This is how it's described. So whenever anyone saw Vishramitra, he was only moving somewhere simply to give someone trouble. So then they met the spies of Dasarath's kingdom. They said, coming on the footpath, Vishramitra Muni is coming right this way. He's only 2 kilometers away from your palace. And Dasarath was wondering, oh my, what's he coming here for? Did I do something wrong? Is he going to curse me? Well, why is he coming? And he was afraid that he's going to come and curse him or finish his kingdom or something. So Dasarath consulted with his ministers, and his ministers said, listen, you send a messenger to Vishramitra. You tell him, you give him this message. And the messenger should go to Vishramitra and say, listen, oh, Maharaj, Vishramitra, King Dasarath, he will give his entire kingdom to you. His entire kingdom he is offering at your lotus feet. And he himself is on his way to greet you. He knows you're on your way. He's coming down from the palace. He'll be here in a matter of minutes. Please relax. You know, here have a lassi or whatever. You know, sit down, relax. Don't get angry. Don't get hot-headed. He's coming. And please don't pass any curses on our kingdom. So Vishramitra, that message was given. So then Vishramitra met Dasarath, King Dasarath. So then there was some discussion. Oh, when then Dasarath came, the messenger said, Dasarath wants you to be peaceful, and I brought this nice asan for you. And Vishramitra said, I don't want any asan. Where's the king? Bring him here. By the time Dasarath got there, he fell at Vishramitra's feet and he said, what do you want? If you want the whole of Kosala, take it. What? I'm a rishi. I'm not into kingdoms. I had a kingdom once. You know, the story, he became a Brahmin, he was a king before. I don't want your kingdom. I came here to ask for something, and you must tell me that you will give it. Dasarath was thinking, I wonder what he wants. Maybe my head. I don't mind giving him my head, but I hope he doesn't ask for Ram. Vishramitra said, what are you thinking? Are you trying to save something? Or you're trying to save something? Dasarath said, no. Just ask and I will give whatever you want. Vishramitra said, yes, I want Ram and Lakshman. Oh. Immediately Dasarath fainted. When he woke up, Vishramitra said, see, you fainted. This proves that you don't want to give. And you lied to me. I am a rishi and you lied to me that you will give me anything and what I want, and now you won't give. Listen, I'm not going to take them away forever. I only need them for a small purpose. I'm doing a yajna, and these demons are always coming and passing stool and urine on my yajna. I want them, these children to come there and play, and then these demons will go away. What? Demons? Oh. And Dasarath fainted again. He says, what did you say? My little boys go and fight with demons? He couldn't bear that. And he said, look, I will go, I will defeat the demons. Vishwamitra says, no. Vishwamitra said, no, it's not that I can also defeat them myself. It's not that you have to come. Vishwamitra said, I could also kill them. Ram has to come. Ram has to come and do this because I have to teach him something. So then he said, all right. So then Ram and Lakshman, they went with Vishwamitra to his ashram, and they were crossing many rivers and going through the forest, and they were in the different rivers, they were playing and they were swimming in the rivers with Vishwamitra, and they're having a wonderful time. They were so happy. Ram and Lakshman were so happy because there was no school. They were on vacation. This is described because they were not going to school anymore. They had a holiday, so they were just playing and swimming in the rivers, and he was such a nice teacher. Vishwamitra was swimming and playing with them, and he was telling them many far-out stories about ghosts and goblins, and they were enjoying all these stories. Then, as they approached Vishwamitra's ashram, in the evening, he sat them down. He said, listen, I have to teach you some very powerful mantras, Bala Mantra and Adi Bala Mantra. And with these mantras, you will use these mantras tomorrow when the demons come to disturb my yajna when they come. So then they got to the ashram. The next day, Vishwamitra started his yajna. So then these two demons were coming, Maricha and Dushan. Anyway, he describes it as Maricha, and he describes in his own words, he says Maricha and Dushana. Anyway, it's different ways, different demons may come. The basic Leela is the same, but this is how he describes it. Names may change. So like sometimes Dainukasura is called Garbhadasura. The Dainukasura is called Garbhada. You'll see Nectar Devotion. It's a completely different name. So someone might say, what's this? So at any rate, so these two demons, when they come, before they arrive, you can understand they're arriving because the stars are falling from the sky and there's the ground is shaking. So you know that these two demons are approaching. Vishwamitra Muni gave a signal to Ram and Bharata, yes, they're coming, so get ready. So then they were getting nearby, so then Lakshman, he took his arrow and he shot his arrow in the sky. A few arrows. And then one arrow became a million arrows, then two arrows, 10 million. So four millions of arrows, and they joined together and formed a chakra, a wheel, was spinning over the top of the yajna, Vishwamitra's yajna. This huge wheel was spinning. So as the two demons were approaching, then they said, what is this? Where's the yajna? I can't see the yajna. There's some huge wheel, some spinning in the sky. Then Maricha said, yes, this is some mystic power of the Brahmins. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. So then Maricha, he was leading the way, and he got closer. And when he got near the wheel, he hit the wheel and he got knocked away. And when he got knocked away, then Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, he took a piece of grass and he threw the piece of grass, and it landed on the back of Maricha, and it took him all the way to the ocean. He landed in the Indian Ocean. And then, in the words of Atmatattva, that Maricha, he was never seen again in India. He went down south in the ocean. He landed in Sri Lanka. He went to Sri Lanka and he opened an ashram, became a Babaji there. That's what he tells. Doesn't seem that he has much appreciation of Babaji. He often uses it, he often mentions Babaji, some demon becomes a Babaji or something. It's some kind of funny feeling or something. Because he himself was previously a sannyasi, and previously was a sannyasi doing tapu in the mountains. At any rate, so then Dushan, he was also killed. So then after the yajna, Vishwamitra, he sat with Lord Rama and Lakshman. He said, I have some questions. He said, these two powerful demons came, and I instructed you in this Bala Adibala mantras. But why didn't you use those mantras to defeat those demons? And Lord Rama said, oh no, those were small-time demons. They were small-time. A blade of grass was enough to kill them. I want to save those mantras you taught us for when we meet some serious challenge. But this Maricha and Dushana, they were small times. So, oh, a blade of grass, one blade of grass is sufficient to kill them. So Vishwamitra was appreciating the omnipotence of his students, of Lord Ram and Lakshman. Oh, there's a whole story about the bow, about the marriage of Sita and Ram. Because of course, you know, there's this famous bow of Lord Shiva. And there's some pastime behind that Narada Muni, he's always, he's a mischief maker. He's a pure devotee of the Lord, Narayan Bhakta. And he's always spreading bhakti all over the world. He's always giving this bhakti, writing nice books, bhakti, Narada Bhakti Sutras and Narada Pancharatra and other things. But he likes to enhance and increase the pastimes of the Lord, because this is the nature of a pure devotee. He's always making arrangements for the Lord's pleasure. He's an instigator, he's a catalyst. He's a catalyst to bring pastimes to fruition and make pastimes happen. Just like Narada Muni went to Mathura and he informed Kamsa, you know, you're worried about the eighth son of Devaki will kill you. Well, the eighth son of Devaki has already been born. There wasn't a miscarriage. He's in Gokul and he's going to come and kill you. So Narada Muni and Kamsa said, what? And then, so someone might say, what is this? Narada Muni, he squealed on Krishna, or he revealed, why did Narada Muni tell the demon Kamsa where Krishna's living? It was only to and speed up the pastimes and to make the pastimes move along. So one time, Narada Muni, amongst the demigods, he created some lafra, some kind of debate. And so he arranged that there was a fight between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. Who was most powerful, Shiva or Vishnu? So then Vishwakarma, he made, because they were now going to fight, Lord Vishnu was going to fight Lord Shiva. So now in order to fight, they have to fight on equal terms. So Vishwakarma made a bow. It's called Shiva Chapa and Vishnu Chapa or something. He made a bow for Lord Shiva. Then he made exactly the same bow for Lord Vishnu, so they would be equal. Now, so that everyone could see who's more powerful, they have this fight. But the situation is that Lord Vishnu, one of his eternal associates is Sharanga. Sharanga is his danur, his bow. He sometimes takes the form of a danur and sometimes he has a regular Vishnu roop, forearm form, and he stands with folded hands on the side of Lord Vishnu waiting to serve him, and sometimes he takes the form of a bow. So, what happened when Vishnu received his bow, immediately, invisible to anyone else, Sharanga came there from Sharanga, the eternal associate of the Lord Vishnu. He came invisibly and he entered into that bow of Lord Vishnu. So he entered into that bow, although the bow was made by Vishwakarma, now that bow that was in the hands of Vishnu became Sharanga. That's right, Sharanga? That's his bow, it's called Sharanga. So now Vishnu had his bow, his invincible bow.
So this is all Leela. So then they started fighting, and Lord Vishnu shot a few arrows. Immediately, Lord Shiva, all his weapons were defeated, and he started running for his life. And then, so he had this bow. What to do with this bow after the fight? So the bow, it came into the kingdom. It came into the kingdom of Janaka, into Janaka's dynasty. And I guess tomorrow we can read about that. But then it goes, there's a story about that, how, because there's many, many Janakas, Janaka 1, Janaka 2, it's the name in that dynasty. So tomorrow we can continue more of these pastimes. Shri Ramachandra ki. The question that he's asking, because I'm not so, I'm reading these things, I'm not so familiar with the Ramayana, I've read it. But the question that Ram Nam is asking, he's saying that when Vishwamitra came to beg Dasarath for his sons, was Vishwamitra aware of the transcendental identity of Dasarath's sons, that they were the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And because being, he did know, you're saying he did. Yes, he did know that they were the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu Tattva. And in order to bring about this Leela and bring out their glories, then he took them from, briefly took them for this excursion to his ashram. Because it was all part of the Leela. Because this is the Yudhya Leela of the Lord. Yudhya means fight. So Ramachandra, he's the ideal king. So king means Kshatriya. So Kshatriya means to protect by herding. A Kshatriya protects the people. Trayate. Katrayate. A Kshatriya delivers people from pain. So he's a Kshatriya. Shat, I think shat means to cut or to give pain. So a Kshatriya is that person who delivers someone from pain. So if the citizens are being afflicted by demons attacking them or tigers attacking them, then the Kshatriya will come and deliver them by his heroic prowess. So his duty is to protect the citizens. He is the protector. So he has to fight. So Ramachandra was enjoying so many fights. So Vishwamitra Muni wanted to facilitate his fighting pastimes. It's very glorious. In fact, Vishwamitra recited a famous verse after that pastime. He recited a famous verse. He said, for a powerful mighty person, even a blade of grass becomes an astra. Astra means weapon. Ramachandra is so powerful, he is the source of all bala. So what need is there for him to take bala and Adi Bala mantras? So he's saying that, he said like that, that grass is sufficient. Even so, a great person, so he's glorifying, Vishwamitra is glorifying, just see the greatness of Lord Ram, that even with a blade of grass he can kill demons. That becomes an astra. So in Dwapara Yuga, there's also another example of a great person killing someone with a blade of grass. Lord Balaram. Ramaharshan Sutta. You know the pastime. Ramaharshan didn't show respect to Balaram when he entered the assembly of sages at, I believe it was Naimisharanya. Ramaharshan was speaking there, and he sat very proudly, like a second. What was it? What did he say? Balaram said, "You're like a second someone." Second. Who is it? You know, he saw Ramaharshan's behavior. And he said, "You're like a second, and like another so-and-so that didn't show respect. Daksha or something. You're like a second Daksha." Something, he made a comment. I can't remember. It's in Krishna book. At any rate, because he didn't show any respect to Balaram, and all the rishis, all the munis, all the sages, they stood up. Baladev ki jai ho, Lord Balaram ki jai ho, Baladev Bhagavan ki jai ho. But he sat there. So then Balaram, he wanted to teach him a lesson in humility, so he took the blade of grass, Trinadapi, Sunichena, Turari, Vasa, Hishnana. Trina means grass, so he's so powerful, simply he touched him with a blade of grass. And some acharyas say that he touched him with kusha grass. So he killed him, but he liberated him also, and because he's a Brahmin, so not ordinary grass, but kusha grass. because Kusha grass was there. He was sitting in the asan. There was Kusha grass and tiger skin and different things. So Balaram just took a piece of Kusha grass. So, like that. We don't have that kind of power, but we have the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we can use that Maha Mantra to defeat, to conquer the demoniac mentality of the greatest demons. Somehow, if we can encourage them to hear the holy name on Sankirtan, their faith will develop, and gradually they can also become devotees. So the holy name is just as powerful as the greatest astra. Sangopangastra Parshadam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into this world, Sangopangastra Parshadam. He came in with his astras. This is a verse from the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Yajna Sankirtana Praya Yajanti Sumedisha. That he came in Yajna Sankirtana, to his associates, Nityananda, Advaita, Srivas, Gadadhar. They are his astras. So his astras are devotees. Devotees, they're the weapons of the Lord. And the weapon they have is the holy name of the Lord and Krishna's prasadam. So anyone who contacts this weapon, anyone who contacts the weapon of the holy name of the Lord, the astra, Mahamantra Astra, the Astra of the Mahamantra, he will develop all saintly qualities. The most proud materialist, the richest, most intelligent, most highly educated, an honored and decorated person, by contacting the weapon of the holy name, his pride will be defeated. All his asuric qualities will be defeated, and he will exhibit humility and all good qualities of a devotee simply by contacting the holy name of the Lord. We've seen politicians, kings, movie stars, big famous people, powerful people, beautiful people. They take a little contact with the holy name and suddenly they become humble Vaishnavas. I've seen one Crorepati. There's one Crorepati in India, very famous Crorepati. He contacted the holy name. And after contacting the holy name, now he walks behind his guru, and he carries the guru's harmonium to Pandal programs. He contacted the holy name. He took diksha, became a devotee. Now his guru goes to some preaching program, and this huge Crorepati, who's famous all over India and practically the world, he humbly walks behind his guru carrying this harmonium, so his guru can sit down and sing some sangeet before pravachan. And everybody's looking, huh? That big famous person who has hundreds of servants, he's one of the famous rich people of the world in India, especially India, he's acting like a common servant, just walking behind carrying the harmonium. Such humility, such dainya, such submission. How is it possible? And then they ask him, how? He said, I am a humble, I trinadapi sunichena torevasya hishana. By serving the holy name of the Lord, by contacting the holy name, I realize that I am the dasano dasano das, Krishna dasano dasano das. Oh, what is your name, sir? Oh, my name is Krishna Chandra Das. I am a servant of that beautiful moon-like face, that Krishna with the beautiful moon-like face. That is my name. Oh, but I thought you were so-and-so in charge of this so-and-so, big industry. No, I am Krishna Chandra Das. I am simply a Das. I am not in charge of anything. I carry the harmonium. That's my service. So this is the power of the holy name. The question was, in the Mahabharata war, why are the Kshatriyas using so many Brahmastras and Agni Astras and Vayu Astras and so many Astras? Why don't they just get down and have a big kirtan and throw kartals and mardangas at each other or something? Anyway, we have to ask Vyasadeva that question.
Mantra.
No, that's not the point. The point was to have a fight. And Krishna is his name. He doesn't want to fight with his name. He wants to fight. It was Krishna likes to fight. And the Pandavas are Krishna's devotees. And so Krishna was enjoying. A father enjoys seeing his son engaging in activities. So Krishna was driving a chariot. He was enjoying seeing his devotees fighting. He was right there. He was telling Arjuna, hey, shoot this one. You know, he didn't take part, but no one knows whether he was speaking or not. You know? Anybody had a tape recorder on the chariot to secretly record Krishna's conversations? Maybe he told, hey, Arjuna, try your Agni Astra. Hey, thanks a lot. Hey, that was a good one. Thanks a lot. That was a good suggestion. This is it. There. Arjuna, this is loving devotee. It's not that for 18 days, Krishna simply drove the chariot. No, no talking, no conversation, no recommendations. I mean, he's part of the Sardi. He's also a Kshatriya in this Delhi side, no? You know, Krishna fought a few demons in his Krishna Leela and Dwarka and Mathura. In Vrindavan, he slapped a few around. He didn't use any weapons. And so in different ages, Krishna uses different weapons. When Krishna comes in Treta Yuga, he uses bows and arrows for weapons. When he comes at the juncture of Dwapara Yuga, he uses his hands. And Vrindavan, he uses his hands and feet for weapons. Right? Krishna Vrindavan used his hands and feet. A slap here and a slap there. Then he went to Dwarka and he threw a few astras. So Krishna, when he comes to fight in Kali Yuga, the astras he uses are the Hare Krishna mantra. So Mahabharata was not the setting. Using the holy names for astras, it's also there. And Krishna, when Krishna wants to use the holy name for astras, he uses them. And he uses the holy name for astras in Kali Yuga. But in Dwapara Yuga, and Treta Yuga, and Satya Yuga, he fights with weapons. So your question is answered in this way. When Madai threw the pot at Nityananda and cut his head, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he ran there. And as soon as he ran there, all of a sudden, his Chaitanya Dayal, we have his name, Chaitanya Dayal, the merciful, compassionate Lord Chaitanya, that form was hidden. And out of Lord Chaitanya, Sarva Avatari, out of Lord Chaitanya came Vishnu. And a Vishnu came out, enraged Vishnu, and he took his chakra, and he was spinning his chakra, million miles spinning. He's about to slice off the head of Madai. This Vishnu Roop came out to protect the devotees. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was just in Radha Bhav and he was just absorbed in Braja Bhav. So Vishnu Roop came out with his chakra. And Nityananda said, hey, back! Get back inside! Back inside! Nityananda said, no, Vishnu, get back. This is Chaitanya Dayal. You're interfering with this mercy leela. Back! And he pushed back. And he put Vishnu back inside there. The chakra went back inside. And Lord Nityananda preached to him, hey, and started preaching to him. Because he's older brother. Nityananda's older brother. He's like 25 years older. He's Balaram. He's 25 years older than Lord Chaitanya. He said, listen, no chakras. Don't kill them. You use the chakras in Dwapara Yuga and in the Mahabharata. But now, take the holy name. Use the weapon of the holy name. Deliver them with the holy name. Or she said, yes, 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 that's right. Those weapons are for the other fighting. This is now we have to fight with the demoniac mentality. We have to defeat the demoniac mentality with the Hare Krishna mantra. So like that. The Mahamantra is when Krishna wills and wants to use it in that way, he does. But Mahabharata was time for Agni Astras and Vayu Astras and Brahma Astras. But at the same time, they always, whenever they use these astras, they're also chanting Nam. Because they're also the name is there. The only reason these astras have power, because first they chant mantra. They don't just whip out an arrow and say, okay, do it. Woo! Okay, arrow, do your thing. Zip, and then the arrow goes out and creates a mountain and creates waterfalls and creates all kinds of, you know, atomic bombs. No, they have to chant mantras. Even in Mahabharata. And what's the first mantra they chant? Om. Om is Krishna Nam. That is the name of Krishna. So even in Mahabharata, like you're asking, you're saying, why didn't in a Mahabharata, why didn't they use the Maha Mantra? They did use the Maha Mantra, but they used it in the form of Om. Om is also Radha and Krishna. The Maha Mantra is also Radha and Krishna. Now there's different ways to answer your question. Srila Prabhupada ki.